get it going here. Okay, we continue in our Gemara Makos. We're on Beis Amid Beis 2B, and we are around the middle. And on the wide lines, the first wide line, the third word. Just to recap briefly for a minute or two, the Mishnah began in describing how there's exceptions to the rules of Edim Zomimim, where the Ed Zomim does not get what he attempted to give to the victim. And that was the case of people lying about the status of a Kohen and saying that he was a halal, and lying about a fact that a person has to go into exile. The Gemara wanted to find out what's the source for that, and the Gemara ended up saying there's psukim that says, because for the halal, you have to do to him and not to his children, and you must give him exactly one that he wanted to give to the other people, which cannot be done with the case of a halal. And therefore, you cannot give them the punishment of being a halal. And similarly, we talked about the idea of galus, where only a person who kills goes into galus, not a person who lied about someone else getting killed goes into galus. So because of those psukim, we see clearly you cannot give these people a punishment that they wanted to give. That left us with one more point, though. So how do you know you give them lashes? We only know you don't do them what they wanted to do. How do we know that we give them lashes? So Gemara went through an involved analysis of the pasuk that where it talks about lashing people for the first time. And it says you justify the person who's just and make wicked the one who's wicked. He says, what does that have to do with court cases? The only case it could possibly be is a case of Edim Zomimim, where you cannot give them the punishment that they wanted to give the person. That's how you only way to understand the pasuk v'itztiku es hatzadik v'ishu es harasha v'hayoyim bin hakos harasha. You're hitting the rasha because he wanted to make someone else the rasha, and therefore we couldn't give him the punishment, so therefore he gets lashed. That's where we ended things off last week. Well, we just got cut short a little bit because we needed another line, because there's one other question the Gemara asks to, so to speak, close out that sugya. And that's the following words, where remember we said, the Gemara says, remez min ha-Torah. Where's the hint to the Torah that you give them lashes? And we saw how it is really a remez, even though that's the only pshat that makes sense in the pasuk, but it's not an overt expression. Give the Edim Zomimim lashes. Gemara says, well, we have another rule. The rule is very simple. We have a rule that we all know. If a person transgresses a negative commandment, and there is no specific punishment mentioned in the Torah for transgressing the negative commandment. We know, for example, we had in last week's parsha, we had all the forbidden relations. You're not allowed to do this, none of that. And then in another place, the Torah tells you what the punishment is. You get kares or other types of punishments. Torah says you can't violate the Shabbos. That's a negative command. But Torah says you get stoned if you violate it. So the Torah often will tell you what the punishment is for transgressing the negative commandment. But what if the Torah tells you thou shalt not do this, but the Torah does not mention what the punishment is? So the default position is lashes. That's the default position. So let's take a look at the case of the Edim Zomimim. We want to know, well, how do we know that we give the false witnesses who we cannot do to them as they wanted to do to the victim, how do we give them lashes? And we came to this complex analysis of the pasuk of Itztiku es hatzadik v'ishu es harasha. Says, so let's just go to, I got a simple reason. Is there a negative commandment about lying in court?
Yep.
Is there such a commandment? Do you guys happen to know where it is, by the way? Where will you find it? Where was it expressed? It's one of the Ten Commandments. Good for you. One of the Ten Commandments. It's one of the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not bear false witness. That's a negative commandment. Does the Torah tell you anywhere what the punishment for bearing false witness is? No. So what's the default position?
Lashes.
Lashes. Would you not say Adim Zomimim are people who bore false witness?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Normally, the Torah says, oh, we're going to give them the punishment they wanted to give to the other guy. Okay, but what if we can't do that? So then let's go to the default position of it's a negative commandment, which was transgressed. There is no punishment stated in the Torah that we can give them at this point. So that should then become lashes. So why did we have to come to such a complex understanding of a pasuk of it, you justify this, that, just say it's a negative commandment. Let me read it inside, then you'll ask your question. So why don't we derive it? What? The penalty for lashes for Ein Zomim when we can't give them the punishment. Me, from the words, lo sa'aneh. And the whole pasuk says, in the Ten Commandments, lo sa'aneh v'reyacho eid shoker. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. So that should be good enough for the punishment. Okay, question? You got a question?
Yeah, where do we derive that lashes is the default?
Well, we're going to get, we know that from somewhere else. We're going to go there, but not now. We know that. That's a fact. That's the Torah tells us. That's the general rule. You get malchus for negative commandments. We know that. If you know, well, I'm going to go there now. We'll go there another time. But that's a fact. You want me to open up another Gemara and start learning another Gemara with you now? Well, that's the fact. So just accept it. The Gemara knows it's a fact. It's a fact. So you get lashed for that. So therefore, you're getting lashed. So then there should be the punishment. That's the source. Why do you have to come on to such an intricate analysis of the pasuk? Okay. So here comes the answer. Come on. Yes. Mishum, because we have another rule that exists. Davilav she'ein bo maisa. This false witnessing is a negative action. But it's a negative commandment that you've transgressed, does not involve an action. You don't do an act when you swear falsely. Okay? Falsely testifying is not legally considered an action. An action is when you hit somebody, steal something, etc., etc. Words alone, even though the Torah gives them value, but it's not an action. And that you're going to ask me, where do we know that from? Well, we'll see that on Dalid. Daf Dalid gets into the whole sugya of Lav Sheim Bo Maisa. So we'll have to be patient to wait and assume the Gemara knows what it's talking about over there. And therefore, it's a negative precept that's not done, that's not involving an action. And the rule is, V'chol Lav Sheim Bo Maisa Ein Lokin Alav. A negative precept that's transgressed that does not involve an action does not get lashed. So therefore, I don't know, where do I know that Adim Zomim, that we can't give them the punishment they intended on giving, gets lashed? I can't know that from the default position that it's a negative transgression where no punishment has been stated other than lashes can be, because it doesn't have an action. And since it doesn't have an action, we could not lash him for that. And therefore, we have to come on to the other pasuk. As you'll see in the notes, this is derived in the Gemara Yud Gimel Amid Beis. Okay. Interesting. Let's just see what Mr. Comment has to say. Apparently, Gemara's conclusion is that the Malkus meet out the Zomim witness who cannot be punished specifically is not the result of having violated the prohibition on testifying falsely, but specifically how Zoma-related penalty. That's how we conclude. Why is he getting lashed? Because he was a false witness, or because of being being proven wrong, right? It's two different difference. You could be a liar but not proven wrong, right? But we'll see.
Doesn't mean you were intending to.
When you get lashed if you intended to lie. There's a negative commandment there. Okay, so the reason why these Ein Zomim get punished is because of Hazama. Not because they've testified falsely, because it's not an action that can be lashed for, because it doesn't have an action. Most Rishonim, however, including the Rambam and the Ritva, understand the Gemara's conclusion to be that Ula's derivation teaches that the prohibition of false testimony is an exception to the general rule, and that here a person does receive lashes for violating a person that does not involve an action. According to this, the lashes are not a unique function of the law of Hazoma, but are the ordinary consequence of having violated a negative commandment. Okay, so whole discussion over there. Anyway, but it is another point I was hoped they would have brought down. You will see in the Gemara Daf Dalet Amud Beis, this is a machlokes. It's a machlokes in the rabbis if you lash somebody for, when it's a non-action negative or not. The Gemara is assuming that, well, it doesn't have an action. We don't lash. There is we rule that way, but there is another opinion, Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that a negative action, a negative command without an action, does get lashed. Does get lashed. So therefore, what would the Gemara say over here according to him? What would they say according to him? So that's a whole discussion, and they have to know, well, what is the sources? So, just to make it brief, if you get it, fine, you don't get it, not. The Ritva explains that really, where's the source that Rabbi Yehuda holds that a negative commandment does get lashed for, even if it doesn't have an action? It's from this very pasuk that we just finished last week. If the pasuk says, if you justify the just guy and make wicked the wicked guy, you get lashed. Yeah. And what's that the case? That's the case of the false witnesses that we can't give them the punishment we want to give them. And the Torah says we lash him, right? So how can we lash him? There was no action done. Right. So he says that becomes the source for why things without an action still would get punished, right? But we wouldn't know that rule without this pasuk. In other words, the Gemara was asking, why do you have to find this whole pasuk to find out that we're going to lash these Edim Zomim, though we can't give them the punishment they wanted to? Let's just say we have a law of you shall not swear falsely. Let's punish them for that. Well, how do you know you get lashed? So I was asking, what's the assumption you're going to get lashed for that, even without an action? So according to Rabbi Yehuda, so we hold you don't get lashed for an inaction. But therefore we need the other pasuk. But according to Yehuda, he'll say, the only reason I know you get lashed when you don't do an action is from the pasuk with the Edim Zomim, where there was no action and they still get lashed. Okay, then you're going to ask me, so what are the other people going to do? I'm not going to go that far. That's the Gemara Daf Dalet. I don't want to do the whole Gemara there now. But I'm just saying, it would appear that, you know, this would be very much involved. The fact we have to come on to this other pasuk and we don't rely on the default rule, it's involved in a machloke. So I'm just pointing out now, FYI, the fact Morris says you don't get lashed for a negative precept of without an action, it's a machloke. And therefore, the Gemara here is saying, according to this opinion, why we have to come on to the other pasuk. And that's why he says, most Rishonim, however, say, the Gemara says that the Ula's derivation teaches that the prohibition of false testimony is an exception to the general rule. Okay, that's another point. But anyway, that's enough for now. Okay, now.
Just one thing. That pasuk, it seems, at least to me, makes a whole lot of sense. It fits real well. If it's the only situation where you exonerate the innocent and convict the wicked, and the only time you can do that is Edim Zomim, then why is there any question why we would use that pasuk? I mean, it fits.
So what are you asking exactly? So therefore what?
Why is your question why are we using that pasuk? It should be clear.
Well, okay, it wasn't too clear to anybody when they were looking at the Chumash beforehand that it was talking about that at all.
No, but once you explain it and say there's no other situation where you can do that, and, then you have to give lashes, then what else is it there for?
That's right.
Okay, so that's what we have now. Okay, so I'm not sure what your question is. What's your question?
Why did it have to?
Why did what?
Why are we questioning? Why are we questioning those who are going back to that pasuk as opposed to?
Well, when did we question it before we understood pshat in the pasuk?
He didn't say Eidim Zomim.
When you looked at that pasuk your whole life, did you know it had to do with Eidim Zomim? No.
No.
It's a mystery. It's a mystery what the pasuk means. So it's not clear. It's not clear. When the Gemara asks a question, when you look at that pasuk, you have no idea it's talking about Eidim Zomim. You just try and understand. Well, what's going on? What's the case? Okay, now that we give you the answer, it's very convenient to know pshat in the pasuk. So Gemara has to go through the point of telling you what the pasuk means, because it's not obvious. It's clearly not obvious. Once you know what's going on, then it's obvious. Very good. But until we do that, you could look at that pasuk a million times. You don't know what it's talking about. You don't know what it's talking about until someone enlightens you. Oh, it's talking about Eidim Zomim. Oh, now it makes sense. So once that's what we need the Gemara to tell us that.
Questioning after the fact, after they realize.
That's the way Gemara always works. It has to make it. Gemara is here to teach us how to learn Chumash, so it's telling you how to learn Chumash. If without that piece of Gemara, without that, all these things of Gemara, right? Without the piece, I'd say, well, why should we lash these Eidim Zomimim? I don't know. You were asking that the first day we were learning this. Why do we lash them? So if I would just bring you that pasuk, you'd say, I don't see that in the pasuk. So Gemara has to go through the point and show you how you see it in the pasuk. That's what Gemara is there for. Okay. Now, our Mishnah gave two cases where we do not give the Eidim Zomim the punishment that they intended to give. We're going to learn now a braisa that says, although the Mishnah mentioned two, there's actually four. And therefore, we're going to learn what those four are. Okay, that's the new Bryce over here. And then we'll have another opinion that says a fifth law. Tana Rabba, the rabbis teach us in a Bryce of the following. Dalid Dvorim Nemru Be'edim Zomim. Four cases. There are four exceptions to the rule of Edim Zomim where we do not give the Edim what they wanted to give. Rather, they will get lashed. So, two of them, first he's going to say the four, and then they're going to explain it. So when you're going to hear it and say, I don't know why, that's fine, the Gemara's going to explain it. First case, A nasim ben grusha ben chalutza. You don't make them the status of a cholo. Number two, they ain't going to Eretz Miklat. They don't go to city of refuge for falsely testifying that someone should. Number three, they mishalman as a kofir. They don't pay kofir. What is kofir? We know that when an owner has a shor hamuad, has an animal, let's go back simple. You own an animal, your animal gores and kills other animals. That's unusual. We call it a tam. You pay half damages, etc. After the third time it gore, we warn the guy, watch out, watch your guy, that your shor doesn't gore. Once it gores three times, then we know it's a muad. That means it's likely to do it, right? Now, if you're this animal gores, now that we've told you, you got a consistent, habitual gore, you better really be careful. If you're not careful then you have a punishment of, you pay the full penalty. Anyway, what's going to happen? That's only we're talking about oxes. However, what if your ox kills a person? Okay? Well, there's all kinds of things going on, but one of the things you got to pay is called kofar. Literally, kofar means kapara. Okay, that's atonement. And that is, you have to pay this amount of money, and it goes to the heirs. I'm just going to say now, without saying any more, purposely I'm withholding information, because it's a machlokas, you pay the value of a life. Don't ask me whose, because we're going to get to it. But that's what it is. You pay the value of a life. What's a life worth? That's called kofar. That goes. So now, if witnesses falsely testify that Reuven's ox killed Shimon, which now would require Reuven to pay the value of a life, and then they're proved to be false witnesses, we'd assume we'd punish them as they wanted to give it. So they should have to pay the value of a life. They don't. That's the third exception to the rule. Fourth exception to the rule, what if you lie about a Jew who stole and he does not have the money to pay? And if he does not have the money to pay, what's the law that happens to a Jew who steals who doesn't have the money to pay? He's sold as a Jewish servant. So these witnesses lied about this case and said he stole when he didn't actually steal. And these guy, and now this guy was supposed to be sold as a Hebrew slave. So you'd think, what do we do to these witnesses? Sell them as a Hebrew slave. And the exception over there as well. And that's the case. They're not sold as an Eved Ivri, as a Jewish servant. That's four. Rabbi Akiva is going to add a fifth. We're all going to explain every line in afterwards anyway. Mishum Rabbi Akiva Amru, in the name of Rabbi Akiva, they said, Af ein mishalmin al pi atzmon. They also don't pay if they confess in a court that they were found to have been Edim Zomim in another court. Let's say these two fellows were proven to be Edim Zomim in a court. The full details we'll talk about later. So therefore, they had to pay, let's say to pay, or whatever. They were Edim Zomim, and now they were caught liars in court A. Okay? Now, or let's say, and now they run away, they're at another place, and now they come and say, nobody knows anything about it, they never got their punishment because they ran away, and now they tell another court, we were Edim Zomim somewhere, we're supposed to get this punishment. Okay? Rabbi Akiva says, we don't give them the punishment under those circumstances. Those are the five cases. Now, I know you're going to say, well, what's going on? It's not fair, but Gemara now is going to go over all the five cases and explain to you how they work. But that's the Braisa. Raisa gives four cases, Rabbi Akiva adds a fifth case. So let's go back one by one. Well, the first two are going to be easy. Number one, Einasim ben Grusha ben Chalutza, the fact they do not become a Halal Kid Amrin, as we already explained in Argamor, that's a repetition of the Mishnah. We already explained the Mishnah, so I don't have to go back and explain that. Now, often, remember, Braisas say whatever they want. Rabbi Yehuda, no, the Braisas are teachings of Tanoim that were not necessarily included in the Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi redacted when he made the Mishnais. But anyway, that Braisa is exactly what our Mishnah says. We don't have to explain anymore. They go to Lare Miklat. They don't go to a city of refuge, Kedamin, as we also explained before, so we don't have to repeat that. But the ones we got to explain are the next three. Vein Mishalmin es HaKofer. They don't pay the Kofer. Now, the question is, why would they not pay the Kofer? I mean, it would make sense. They're lying. This guy now would have to pay the value of a life. So, and that was wrong. So they should have to pay the value of a life. Right? The answer to that question will hinge on what is the basis of making the owner of the shore, the animal that gores, why should he have to pay kofar? What's the basis of it? What is the nature of that money that he would have to pay? Now, there's different times. Let's say when I steal money from you and you catch me, I have to pay. What's the basis of it?
Restitution.
Yeah. Right? Restitution. All right? I broke your fine china plate. I have to pay. What's the basis of it? Restitution. Is there any other basis of paying money in a court? What? Penalty. Knas. Sometimes it has nothing to do with restoring what was lost. It's a fine. A man violates a woman. There's a knas. There's a fine we pay. What does that do? That doesn't restore anything. It's a punitive measure. It's a knas. So we have two types of payments in a court. One is restitution. One is punitive. And we're going to find a third type of payment, and we'll see it's called kapara, atonement. Atonement. That's a third thing. When I steal money from you and I pay you back, we can't call that atonement per se. Because, listen, you're missing something. I have to fill it in. It's not a question of atonement. No. It's like, I had $50. I don't have $50. Give me back my $50. Yeah. We don't call that atonement. That's restitution. when we find somebody, that's clearly not restitution. But sometimes it's not a question of a fine, it's not a question of restitution, because this animal killed an animal, killed a person. Okay, so the only way you could give restitution is if you bring the guy back to life, which we're not able to do. So now you're going to give money. We'll see exactly how and what. But what is that? That can't be restitution. You're going to say that $1,000 restored the person, right? So you're going to see there's an aspect called kapara atonement. But we're going to see there could be a machlokas about this. Anyway, so now these false witnesses who lied, what were they really testifying? This guy must pay kofar. He must pay this. This is not a case of restitution. What is it? Well, let's see. It's a machlokas. Let's see what it is. So if this brisa says you don't pay for it, if it would be restitution, certainly the false witnesses should have to pay. Right? What if they falsely say Reuven stole $100 from Shimon and they're proved to be liars? What do they do? They got to pay $100 to Reuven because that was restitution. The fact that false witnesses on cases of kofar don't pay it means it can't be a restitution. Because if it's restitution, they should have to pay for it. So what is it? So Kasavi, you got to say the author of Brisa Hall's Kofra Kapara. The basis of Kofra is an atonement payment for the owner's negligence in allowing his ox to run amok and kill someone. Okay, it's an atonement. Okay, so what did the witnesses lie about exactly? They lied that fellow needs atonement for what? Letting their animal run amok. Okay, now, can we do that to the witnesses? Do these witnesses require kapara? Did the witnesses allow their ox to run amok?
No.
The whole nature is just for that. So now, Vahani and these witnesses, lav kapara ninhu, they are not people who are subject to this atonement because their animal did not kill. Okay, now, this requires elucidation. The issue is not whether they should pay the kofar as an atonement, but whether they should pay it as a hazama penalty for attempting to make their victim suffer this financial loss. Remember, they're not, right? So the question is, he too did not require an atonement since his ox did not kill, yet their false testimony would have forced him to pay nonetheless. Right? At the end of the day, he really wasn't going to be paying for an atonement. At the end of the day, was he really, if they would have not been found liars,
yeah,
what would that have, would that payment have actually been an atonement?
No.
Because the animal didn't really gore them.
No. Yeah. No.
Right? So that's the question. So why shouldn't they pay the money?
That's right.
You understand? You're right. Kofar is an atonement when it actually happens.
But it didn't, so therefore.
But since they, so now that's the question the rabbis are asking on the Gemara. Gemara says, well, it was an atonement, and these guys don't require the atonement because it wasn't their ox that gore.
That's right.
But they reshone a mask. But wait a minute. But the original guy never really did that either, did he? His ox never really did it.
Yeah.
So when the false witnesses lied, what did they really lie? They didn't lie that this man has to pay for an atonement. That's what they said, but that's not. At the end of the day, if he would have had to have paid and they weren't caught as liars, what would in God's eyes have happened? This guy falsely lost money.
Mm-hmm.
So isn't that what you always do to Edim Zomimim? That's what they wanted to do to him, we would do to him. Yeah, that's a great question, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Ramban answers that according to the view that kofar is an atonement payment, the real punishment for someone whose muad ox killed is premature death at the hands of heaven. That's the real punishment. You have to know, when we say that kofar is an atonement, if you have an ox, that's a muad. I don't know if I stressed that enough when I first presented it. It's only when your animal is a muad. If your animal is not a muad, there's no kofar. That was an accident. What can you do? But if it was a muad, so really what's supposed to happen to you, if you don't do anything, God's going to kill you. Period. End of story. That's the way it's supposed to be.
How about the victim? Nothing?
The victim's dead.
Yeah, I know. So no compensation.
Wait. So now the Torah says, you know what? Pay the money and that will take away the premature death. That's what the Torah is saying. In other words, that's why it's called kapara. In other words, what's really going on here, when you were negligent and your animal killed, how dare you not be careful with your animal? And we're not going to say, and you can't send him to an Ir HaMikvot, because we can't exactly call him a shogeg, because he didn't kill him. Mm-hmm. Right, so we can't summon the Aramiklet. But that was terrible what you did. So we got no way of dealing with you. God's going to have to punish you. But God says, you know what? If the guy will pay money to the heirs, that will be the atonement. So he won't have to get killed. Okay? You follow how the logic is working here now. That's why it's kapara. Kapara, it's an atonement, because you really should get killed. So kofar, what's going on here, is merely a substitute for this punishment. It atones for the person's sin and thereby releases him from his punishment. You see why it's an atonement now. What about Yom Kippur? It's called the Day of Atonement. Why is it the Day of Atonement? Because we've done so many averos, even though there's no korzei, Hashem should kill us all. So what do? We're doing tshuva. We spend the whole Yom Kippur. Now what happens at the end of Yom Kippur? Hopefully, we got atonement. And now atonement means you're not going to get what you're supposed to get. Mm-hmm. So now, what happens over here? Pay the value of what, we'll see what the value is. Pay money to the heirs, and that will give you atonement. You're not going to get killed by God. Okay? Hence, wherever the punishment of premature death is not applicable, let's say it's not a question of premature death, neither is kofar. There's no reason to get atoned.
That's right.
Now, Zomim who testify that someone's mu'ud ox killed are surely not subject to premature death as a hazama penalty, for their victim would not have died by the hand of heaven as a result of their testimony, had it not been discredited. Why? Because Hashem knows he didn't kill him.
That's right.
It's not a case of Chilul Shabbos where we lie that the guy's Chilul Shabbos and the Bezer will kill him.
Right.
So these guys wanted to kill the guy and he would have been killed. But if they lie about this case, what are they lying? They're saying, well, really, God should give him premature death, and therefore the court's going to make him pay money, and now you got to pay. And the court says, yep, okay, you got to pay. Okay, now we got to do to these witnesses what they wanted to do. We can't say that they wanted that they were going to get the guy killed by God's hands. Why?
Because
God knows he didn't do it. You understand the difference here? When it's a case of Chilul Shabbos, and what will happen? The Bezdin will kill him, even though God knows he shouldn't get killed. Right? You hear? So now, you really were going to kill him. And had what you done did, you would have got killed. So we're going to kill you. Fine. But when these guys lie about the ox, so I say, well, we were testifying that you should die by the hands of God. And since you're not going to die by the hands of God, the Torah says you pay the money. So fine. So what happened if they would have got away with it? Would he have died by the hands of God? Never. What if the guy, let's say this, what about a regular case of kofar? The guy says, I'm not paying. A real case of kofar. Real case. I'm not paying. So the peasant said, and let's say, and the peasant, I ain't got no money, and I ain't doing anything. So the peasant says, have mercy on your soul. God's going to kill you early. God's going to kill you early. What else can peasant do? All right. So now, if you would have said, that when Adam and Zomim do that, the guy's going to get killed by God, then we have something maybe to talk about. But it's not true. The fact that they lied, God never, ever intended to kill this guy. He will never die premature death, but he would lose money. Right? He would lose money. Okay, accordingly, kofar, which replaces the heavenly penalty, does not apply to them either, because they never really planned on, they never really would have succeeded in killing him. Ridfa concludes that this exercise may in fact be what Rashi means to say, except that his language is brief, characteristically brief. Okay? So that's why we're saying that they really don't need the atonement. Why? Because they never really established the fact that he is going to die in the hands of God. Right? So they hold that kufr is a kapora. Vahani lav b'nei kapora ninu. They don't need the kapora here because he never really needed a kapora. It is kapora, but this guy never, whatever they said,
the first
he doesn't need the kapora.
No.
So therefore, it's out. So there's nothing there. If there's no kapara, there's no money to pay. The money is a result of kapara. So only if they actually would have gotten away with it, but they wouldn't have. Clear? So that's, you'd have, we are assuming now that this brisa that says we catch these guys, they don't pay, because they're not b'nei kapara ninhu. So the way you thought without, from Rashi alone would have thought, well, they didn't actually have their ox that killed him. That's why they don't need kapara. We said, that's not going to answer, because you do to them what they want to do to the other guy. So they really would still need kapara. But now we're saying, even if what they said was true, even if they got away with what they got away with, the man himself, the victim, whatever you want to call him, was falsely accused, will not need kapara. There's just no kapara here. And the whole money comes out of the kapara. So they never got away with that. They never got away with it. So that's why the Braisa says not. So now the Gemara, we're going to just add, it's going to be more, but the question is this agreed by all that that is what kofar is? Does every rabbi in the Gemara say that the kofar is a kapara? Maybe it's something else. So Gemara says, man tana, who is the tana that says kufra kapara? That when you pay kofar, it's a kapara. Who says that we're saying this brisa will be like that, rabbi? So Amar Rav Chista says, you know what it is? Rav Yishmal, Beno, so Rav Yochanan ben Broka. It's Rav Yishmal, who's the son of Rav Yochanan ben Broka. How do we know this? Detanya, we have a Bryce that says the following. The Torah says about such a fellow whose ox muad killed somebody, the Torah says, Venosan pidyon nafsho. And the owner of the ox shall give a ransom for his life. Pronoun is not helpful. Yeah. Now, that's the question. He will give a ransom, a co-fare, for his life. Now the question is, whose life? Well, this is a machlokas. Clearly a machlokas. Question is, what do we deduce from this machlokas? Well, Tanakama, the no-name Tanakama, says, Dmei Nizak, the value of the person was killed. Now, how do we know the value? We say if a guy was a slave on an open market and you sell him, you know, 27-year-old man, what is he worth? What will he be able to get for the rest of his life? So now, certainly, people have different values. A guy who's 6 foot with muscles, you know, strong guy. Another guy's got broken legs and, you know, so it's different. So he says, so Tanaka says, Demei Nizak. It's the value of the guy who got killed. Okay? Rabbi Yishmal ben Osho, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka Omer. Demei Masik. It's the value of the one who killed him. It was owner. The owner of the ox. It's the value of the owner of the ox. What it is. So what would you think the machlokas? What's the problem?
What's the value of the owner of the ox got to do with?
Because I need kapara.
Yeah.
No?
That's what I understand. That's what I feel.
So the question is, who are we evaluating? It's a machlokas. The guy who got killed, got killed. So now my love, isn't it? But how come this is the machlokes of who you do it by? Demar Sover, one of the rabbis, holds kufra mamona. One says it's a monetary compensation. If it's a monetary compensation, so what do? You look at the guy who got killed, because that's what we're compensating with. This is a machlokes. Well, compensation, restitution, same thing. Right. We're going to say this opinion holds not. I was telling you, there's a machlok, right? Yeah. It must be that this rabbi who says you look at the value of the guy that killed, it has nothing to do with kapara at all. Yeah. It's monetary. Now, if Adim Zomim would, if that's the case, if Adim Zomim lie about that, would they have to pay that?
Yeah.
Oh, because that's a restitution case. But our brisa says they don't pay it. So who's our brisa like? The second rabbi. Umar Sover Kufra Kapara. While Rabbi Yishmael says kofar is an atonement payment. If it's atonement, then how are we going to set the value? Who's going to die at the hands of God? The owner of the ox. So now, he has to give the value of his life. So he set the kofar payment to his life, because it's not a restitution, it's a kapara, because he's supposed to be a dead man by God's hands. So he pays the money. So you see, the one who holds that kofar is an atonement payment is Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Yochanan ben Broka. Now, why? Because he wasn't careful in guarding his ox, and it's led to someone's death. The owner of the ox should really be subject to having the decree of death. The Torah provides cover and substitute. Thus, the simple logic situation dictates that he pay his own worth or ransom. So far, we're going to end here. We're not finished. There's a machlokas. There is a machlokas. Whose life do you pay? Is it the one who got killed or the owner of the ox? We think now that that means there's a machlokas what the nature of kofar is. Is it monetary or is it kapara? We think at this point that our brisa that says false witnesses do not pay the kofar must be only going like the rabbi that says you value it by the owner's life, because that means it's a kapara, and they don't need kapara because they never really made him to get a death penalty. It would seem that our brisa is not like the rabbi who says that you pay the value of the victim, but the Gemara tomorrow is going to say not necessarily so. So we're going to end it at that for today.